Welcome to Pet Food Advisors. I'm Tracy Hotchner, a pet wellness advocate with a special interest in dog and cat nutrition, here to help you unravel the mysteries of pet foods so you can make thoughtful decisions about feeding your own dogs and cats. This show is a production of Pet Media, Inc., with opinions and information that are the sole responsibility of the expert guests who offer them. The Radio Pet Lady Network also produces the Dog Film Festival, which celebrates the love between dogs and their people and the rescue groups that bring them together, traveling across the country. You can find more information at dogfilmfestival.com. If you want to stay in the know when it comes to doing what's best for your pets, follow me on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find me at Tracy Hotchner. That's Tracy with an I-E. Have a pet-related question or comment? Post it on my page or tweet me. This show is made possible in part by Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian in Colorado, who has created innovative litters for the health of all members of the family, with low-dust litters that allow everyone to breathe easier. Precious Cat's newest health monitor litter has broken new ground by allowing people to find the early signs of kidney disease in their kitties and intervene before damage is done, prolonging the quality and length of a kitty's life. I have invited onto Pet Food Advisors a man whose world is not about pet food, it's about pain and pain relief. Dr. Michael Petty has written a book called Dr. Petty's Pain Relief for Dogs, The Complete Medical and Integrative Guide to Treating Pain. He's really dedicated his life to the management of pain in pets. He is a pain management expert, owner of the Ann Arbor Point Veterinary Hospital and Animal Pain Center in Canton, Michigan, where I personally wish I could drive there with my dog Jazzy because I have a feeling he could really help her. He's past president of the International Veterinary Academy of Pain Management and co-author of something I didn't know existed, the 2015 American Animal Hospital Association Pain Guidelines, meaning the thing that your own vet would turn to when trying to figure out what to give your dog or cat or how to give it. Dr. Petty's book has many, many really extraordinary pieces of advice and information for you to use yourself and take to your vet. But then there's a chapter, and why do you think we're on Pet Food Advisors, called Diets and Nutraceuticals, What Can You Believe? Dr. Mike, thanks so much for taking time away from your busy practice, for joining us and talking about pet food and supplements and what you can put in your dog's mouth that really can make a difference for their health, but particularly for their pain.
Thanks, Tracy, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, before we start, let's just make it clear, you are a dog owner yourself. I guess it'd be kind of weird not to be, right? On the other hand, it's a busman's holiday. You're surrounded by them all the time. Who are your dogs?
So I have two dogs. They're both Portuguese water dogs.
And, wow, Porties. Did you have them before President Obama had it? Did you give him the idea?
Yeah, my oldest one is 13 years old, and she is a pre-Obama Portuguese water dog. And my other one is named Kiki, and we've had her for 2 years.
Now, isn't that delightful? Do they do very watery things? Do you take them into the lake or something?
So, interestingly, my older one has never liked water. She reluctantly gets into it. In fact, we used to have a pool at our house, and the only way she'd get in the pool was if she could get on a raft and float around.
Oh, is that hilarious.
Yes, the younger one will swim in a one-inch deep puddle.
So. Just can't wait to be wet. Now, does a 13-year-old have any pain?
Yes. Unfortunately, she has a lot of issues, and I could spend an hour talking about all of her health issues. But one of the first ones that came up was hip dysplasia, and very, very severe hip dysplasia.
Oh, boy.
And so I have been treating that throughout almost her entire life since she was about 18 months old.
Wow. That's a huge challenge. I had a Rottweiler puppy that was tossed by the side of the road, a little guy when I took him in. And he was so beautiful and so sweet, and I thought, why would somebody throw away this puppy in a cardboard box? And about 6 months old, he started screaming in pain, and it wasn't even hip dysplasia. He had no hip socket, so his back legs just didn't even connect. And I kept him alive for a long time, and I did the opposite of what they told me because I was not going to put him through double hip surgery. I kept him lean and kept him constantly exercising as long as he went in a straight line. If he tried to run in a circle with the other dogs, he would just fall down. What have you done for that Portie with diet? Is that something you've thought about right along, or did you just try and keep her lean?
Yes. So weight control has been very, very important for her. And I have been able to notice that when it gets out of control, you know, we have two dogs now. Sometimes she's the finisher upper.
Yes.
And when she gets a little heavier, we can see her activity go down. And for diet, we try to keep her on a joint-friendly diet. And we've used a variety of them over the years.
Do you believe in prescription veterinary diets for joints, I believe? From your book, you talk about a number of brands, and you seem to have high regard for their formulation, their science, their ingredients, and their results.
Yes. So it's less about prescription diets and more about can we trust what's really, really in there. And so that's why I talk about prescription diets.
Because I see.
I know they've been really well researched. But it doesn't mean that there aren't other good diets out on the market. I just don't have the ability to look at a label and say, yes, that's it.
Right, because you're not a board-certified veterinary nutritionist. That isn't your area of focus. And those foods are some of the very few foods or even things that a dog can ingest that I'm aware of that have studies behind them. I think one of the challenges for me personally, I'm a big supplement taker. I think I spent too many years living in California, quite frankly. But anyway, they were formative years. And so now I've just embraced the concept that I don't believe that the modern diet, no matter how carefully you cook it or buy it or prepare it, has the elements, the nutrients, and so forth in those foods that might be on a chart because they've traveled, because they've been refrigerated, because they've been cooked, and so forth. So I would love to give more supplements to my dogs. And like your two-year-old, I have a two-and-a-half-year-old and a year-old Weimaraner, and I would like to be giving them something that's preventative of joint pain, preventative of arthritis. And I don't know that there's really evidence out there about elements like glucosamine, MSM, chondroitin, green lip muscles. I'm sort of jumping around because I know there's a lot of things I want to discuss with you on the show. But what about preventative supplementation, preventative feeding? Is that something you've thought about with your younger dog?
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, there have been studies showing that diets that are high in omega-3 fatty acids help delay the onset of osteoarthritis. The studies of things like glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate have gone both ways. I can probably find just as many studies on one side of the argument and just as many on the other as to whether they help or not. So I have a feeling, and this kind of gets back to what you were talking about, that every dog is an individual and every
yes.
dog needs to have their needs tailored to individually.
And is that something that in your practice, I know from many other chapters in the book that there are so many different options and modalities that can be tried with dogs. And in terms of actual full-on medication, it does take a cocktail to keep a dog out of pain. No one thing is probably going to solve it. As you say, 1 + 1 + 1, I think, equals 10. But in terms of other things that one can do, it's very hard to judge, is this working or not? You kind of hope that it's working. And in the book, you talk very, very rightly about the issue of the person hoping and wishing. You speak about raw food diets, which are controversial, except to those who feed them, to whom it's, you know, absolutely almost like a religion, if you will. It is something they believe so fiercely, and to many other people, it has areas of controversy. But you talk about people wanting to believe that something helps, and therefore they see that it has helped. Is that something you see not just with food but in general in your practice?
Yes, absolutely. And there's a term for it, and it's called caretaker placebo. And pet owners will want something to work so bad, whether it is a medication that's prescribed, a diet that's prescribed, or something that they've decided to give themselves. And they can see a very, very positive effect. And we have subtle influences on our dogs and cats and how they act. And as a result of that, we'll see improvements, even though it has nothing to do with what's being given, but everything to do with the interaction between the owner and the dog. One of my favorite examples is we were doing an FDA study for a potential new pain medication. and we had this little white dog, and this dog is very arthritic in its front legs, and it would lick its wrists constantly, so that had that rust-colored fur. And we gave an injection of this drug, which is supposed to last 2 months.
Okay.
And within about a week, we started to see an improvement in the dog. The owner saw it.
Wow.
I saw it. Even the next-door neighbor saw it. It got so improved that the dog quit licking its joints. It had white fur growing back in by the end of the study. And at the end of the study, when everything was concluded, it turned out this dog was on placebo.
Oh, my goodness. So you as a vet saw the improvement. This was not the imagined hopefulness of the owner, the next-door neighbor, and
right.
the dog stopped licking. It wasn't just imagined.
Yes,
you saw physical evidence that this dog was no longer in pain.
Yes, I saw the improvement. So this is why whenever a study is done, it is absolutely mandatory that there has to be a placebo involved. And any result that is given at the end of the study involves taking the results from the drug dogs and subtracting the results of the placebo dog. So in other
right.
words, if they saw 80% of the dogs get better that were on the drug, but they also saw that 40% of the dogs that got better on placebo, then they say, well, we had a 40% improvement. They subtract the 40 from the 80.
I see. Well, you talk about something that I've sort of known about, but I'd forgotten that it existed, the force plate, as part of a study that the dog at the beginning of evaluation, even if it's not a study, even if they're just going to, let's say, the University of Tennessee, which has a really great program that people can come to. I'm just familiar with some of the doctors there. And they also have
sure.
a big push for various kinds of food therapies, if you will, personalized diets. And the dog walks on this force plate, and a sensor tells you how much pressure the dog is or isn't putting on the various limbs. And then, theoretically, after some treatment, it would change, right?
Correct. But that's not without its force plates are not without their own problems. So I've seen force plates used, and so they have a dog, and they walk across it, and the person that's recording it says, you know what, he didn't walk in a straight line that time.
Uh-huh.
We're throwing that one out. And the next time it's like, you know what, he stumbled there, that's going to throw it off, we're throwing that one out. So at the end, there's the possibility of a subconscious push towards making good and bad results on a force plate.
And also the dog himself, now that he's gone three or four times, he's going to walk more comfortably because he's more gotten used to it. Maybe he's even limbered up a little. Isn't that funny to imagine that?
Yes. So it takes a really good force plate operator to get accurate results.
Okay. So, my Lord, it's much of this is in the eye of the beholder. Now, I take glucosamine. And I used to always take something called Platinum Performance. It was originally made for horses, and then they came out with a canine and then a feline and a human version, and they have many, many formulations. And a lot of the vets that I respect enormously on the West Coast, because it's a West Coast-based private company, give this to all those animals and take it themselves. And I remember some of their studies, which were properly done studies, but this is going back 10, 20 years, that I always had thought, and the kind of popular notion is that glucosamine and chondroitin were the two things that if used together worked best. But what they found, if I recall well at the time, was that glucosamine MSM worked better together. And you talk about these various ingredients in Chapter 13 of Dr. Petty's Pain Relief for Dogs. And you also talk about green-lipped mussels. Now, green-lipped mussels seems to be the thing, if I can tell, of a supplementation or a nutraceutical that you have the highest regard for based on facts. Is that true?
Yes. So there's been several studies done on green-lipped mussels, and both dogs and cats, and they have almost all of them have shown positive results. And these are like blinded studies. No one knows whether they're getting.
The really expensive studies that I actually thought that a lot of supplement companies couldn't afford to engage in, because I think it's important for people to know that studies never cost much less than $100,000 and can go up to $250,000 or more, even with only, 30 dogs or 20 cats. I mean, these studies cost a fortune, And no one's, I don't think anyone's getting rich off of the study, but, you know, the, a university setting, I believe, usually has to be used, and you have to use manpower and a lot of recording of things. I mean, it's pretty complicated. So myself, I play too much tennis. For my age, I should not play tennis 6 days a week with a lot of men who are stronger and younger, but I'm nuts. So Advil, I can't even take one Advil, and that would be an NSAID, which a lot of which you also talk about a lot in the book. So you can imagine that playing that much tennis, I should have a lot of sore joints and achy muscles and what have you. And I take a glucosamine MSM supplement. And the brand didn't matter to me other than the fact that, and you mentioned this earlier, that I understand that there's a seal, for at least for human supplementation, that shows that the product has been tested or retested, probably by a third party, to show not only that what it claims to have in it is in it, but in that amount, not less, not more. So that brand happens to be Now, but they're NOW, but there may be others as well. So I went away from companies that I really loved and liked, but they didn't have that seal, at least for me, not for the dogs. And I really and truly do not take one Advil and do not have any joint or muscle pain playing that much on hard courts year-round. I mean, that's kind of incredible. Now, I did have pain before. It's not like I was some kind of supersonic person. So does that mean that I do really well on glucosamine MSM? Because it's not like I'm eating a can of sardines every day, which in theory I should.
Right. So it probably means that you're doing really well on MSM. One of the things that has been found out about glucosamine is that it is not absorbed through the intestinal tract unless it's in the presence of chondroitin sulfate. So unless you have a combination product of glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate, you're probably not getting glucosamine into your system, or you're not getting the amounts that you would expect.
So it does need the chondroitin as a kind of messenger of the glucosamine. And then MSM should be added as well, or that's not – did I have it backwards?
No, MSM is good. MSM is good by itself. It's good in the supplement with other products as well.
So you need all three?
No, but you need glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate together. You always need those two paired, with or without MSM.
But if the MSM is piggybacking, so much the better?
Yes, I think MSM has more evidence behind it than the glucosamine chondroitin sulfate.
Wow.
And one of the curious things is that glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate seem to work very well for some dogs and not for others. And so there are studies out there that show the benefit of them, and there are studies out there that show that they don't do anything.
And it depends on the dogs who were in the study. I mean, some of my dogs did amazingly on products, and other dogs, it was like you gave them the placebo that wasn't working.
Right. And so what I recommend is try it. And try it for, you have to give it at least 60 days for most nutraceuticals to decide if they're going to work. But try it for 60 days, and if you don't think it's working, stop. And what some people are surprised. They say, you know, it didn't work. I'm going to quit giving it. It's expensive. And then 3 weeks later, they come in and say, you know what? It was working because now my dog can't do this.
Yes.
So the changes are often very, very subtle and gradual.
And sometimes you have to keep on it for the month or month and a half. And then if you give up a little early, then you see, oh, my God, it was doing something because now the dog is quite a bit worse.
Exactly.
So unfortunately, you have to sort of experiment backwards. On the show Holistic Vets, we're going to talk about the next chapter, botanical medications for treating pain. So I want to concentrate on what's in this chapter, milk protein concentrates. Now, I recently learned about a bovine colostrum. Is that what you mean by a milk protein concentrate, or is milk protein concentrate something else altogether?
No, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So there has only been one study that's ever shown a positive result, and it was a study that was performed by the company that makes and sells it. So I'm not saying it can't help,
but
I've tried it in a lot of my patients, and no one has thought it helped. But I've talked to other pain vets that feel like it has some value. So in my practice, I'm very, very research and proof-oriented, so unless that study comes out, I feel guilty if I ask my clients to spend the money on
that. That's right, because it is money, and it's hope. You know, you don't want their hope to go down the drain, because if they spend $25 for this bottle and $15 for that bottle and nothing helped, then they might lose some confidence in you, too, as their
Correct.
Practitioner. I mean, that's another strange part of this, is that belief and faith in you is an important part of it, just like I guess the placebo for that dog was the person's belief and faith that that shot was going to make a difference, and who knows if it did or not. So in terms of your younger dog and protecting her against the possible development of arthritis, which is inevitable in all of us eventually, do you give her a glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM, green lip muscles? Are those some of the things you give her or not?
Yes, and I would try to choose a dog food that had those in it, primarily to save some money. You know, the glucosamine chondroitin sulfate supplements can be very, very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And yet when you buy a premium dog food that already has it in it, it's, you know, you're almost getting the dog food for free. Sometimes the cost of the food is no more than if you were to just to buy the supplement.
Now, I'm really surprised to hear you say that, because I was under the impression that sometimes – foods that said on the bag or in the ingredient deck that had those ingredients in them, that it was such a small amount. This was a belief that I had gotten from hearing people talk about it, that the amount was so small, almost more like a marketing ploy than an actual functional ingredient, that you had to supplement because that was really just a little taste, if you will. But you're saying, are you talking about over-the-counter, like super premium pet foods, or are you talking only about RX prescription diets?
Yeah, so I'm talking primarily about the RX diets, because I know for a fact that they have what they have in them.
Right.
And the over-the-counter foods, they can state ingredients without looking at the possible digestibility and so forth of those products. So the prescription diets are held to a slightly higher standard, not by the FDA, but by the companies themselves. Because you can imagine if something came out on one of these prescription diets on one of their food.
It would be deadly for them. I mean, professionally deadly.
It would, yeah.
And so I guess just as an aside for myself and some other pet food nutty people, that the other ingredients in the RX diets – the source of protein, the source of fiber, the source of other ingredients is not to our liking. Let's just put it that way. They
Correct.
Don't have the kind of whole foods, the kind of, you know, food-based foods, more like chemically-based things or more manufactured ingredients for I guess sometimes for purity or other concerns that are just unappealing to those of us that like to see protein is the first named thing, and we don't like to see corn, gluten, and wheat. And some of those things are highly present in the $80 for a medium-sized bag RX foods. I mean, that's a separate issue, because
right.
whether they really work or how they work or how do you get from A to B, I mean, would you rather serve Tang or would you rather serve fresh squeezed orange juice? I mean, for me, that's sort of what it comes down to, because Tang, which I don't think even exists anymore, whatever the astronauts drank, in theory, it gives you all the same benefits as real orange juice does. But I don't know. I guess it's, again, those years in California that make me think, even if that orange was lacking in its actual vitamin C or something, I think I'd rather have it. But I guess...
Right.
The point is...
Well, you're right. When you get to these food things, it's often so much better to have the whole food. And even that, the research, yes. So Tang has as much vitamin C as oranges do and on down the ingredient list. But yet we know that actually eating an entire orange is way better than eating a juice, because
That's
there
right.
is an interaction between the fiber and
yes.
the sugars.
And the pith.
And
yeah,
so forth.
All of it.
Right. Right.
Well, I think that you know, what this really does is this conversation, because we've run out of time, it really opens people's minds to the fact that some things may work, some may not. Some have science, some don't. Some of the science is contradictory, some isn't. There is no absolute, ooh, you must use a fish oil supplement on top of the food that has fish in it because XYZ reason. Some of it has to do with being willing to spend that money. Watch the dog. Of course, it doesn't help in a young dog where you're trying to be preventive, because they're just, you know, wildly pain-free anyway. But some of it has to do with personal experimentation, and I don't think there's any particular harm done. So if personal choice makes you feel better to give some supplementation in the areas that you write about, whether it's greenlit mussels or oral hyaluronic acid, which is something we will discuss on another show, you say there's poor benefit of that. But greenlit mussels, how do you recommend buying that? I mean, just to buy it in powdered in a capsule kind of way and then put it in the food?
So I actually haven't seen it as a separate entity. I've only seen it as part of dog food ingredients. But if you can buy it separately,
you can. They sell it for people all over the place.
Great. So it goes back to what you were talking about. You know, make sure it has the USP or NSF label.
Yes, that's
on
the
it.
One. NSF. I couldn't remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other good thing that I always tell people is look for the FDA has this thing called good manufacturing practices. And this gets back to what you were talking about. You know, it doesn't matter, even if it has the USP and the NSF, were they putting it, that means it was checked for heavy metals, it was checked for infections, it was checked for adulteration.
Right.
But was it manufactured in a sanitary condition? Was it a well-controlled condition? Do they have documentation, et cetera, et cetera? So also look for the FDA good manufacturing practices. If you apply either USP or NSF, and then look for the FDA good manufacturing practices, you're going to knock a lot of supplements out of the game.
Yep, that's absolutely true. And then what's left, maybe it's a buck more, maybe it's not, but at least you're getting what you're paying for. Now, whether it'll work is something that remains to be seen. Dr. Mike Petty, what a wonderful conversation. Your book, Dr. Petty's Pain Relief for Dogs, is so wonderful. I'm looking forward to many more people getting it for their dogs. And we will talk again soon. People can find more conversations with myself and Dr. Petty on Dog Talk, on Holistic Vets, and on The Expert Vet. Thanks, Dr. Mike.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
This show has been brought to you in part by Spot Platinum, an allergy test for which elements in your dog's environment or diet may be causing his scratching or licking. Spot Platinum can detect allergies for which they can make a USDA-approved serum custom tailored to your dog's specific needs to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done more than 500,000 allergy tests over 25 years. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. Support for this show also comes from VaxiCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. Shelters can use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxiCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon.